everyone, and welcome to Minute 69 of Season 5 of Movie Around Minute, the daily podcast where we yippee-ki-yay our way through the 1990 Bruce Willis action film Die Hard 2, Die Harder, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again today is John from the Dirty Harry Minute. Welcome back, John.
Thank you, Rob, for having me yet again.
So, episode 69 begins with John continuing to get annoyed with Marvin, and ends with Barnes seeking an answer. So we ended things yesterday with John going down to the basement, finding Marvin, and saying to Marvin, you got to help me get to the pilot's briefing room. And Marvin started looking through his filing system, and John's getting a little antsy because he really wants to get there to hear what they have to say in this very important meeting in the possibly non-existent pilot's briefing room. And so the minute begins with John going, Marvin. And then Marvin goes, or maybe it'll be under M for miscellaneous. And, you know, he's dealing with the system. And then we hear some beeping. And then Marvin goes, oh, shit. And then we see him unroll like a thing of blueprints. And, you know, we see that we can still hear the sound of something, you know, happening underneath. And then we hear Garber on the radio saying, this is Garber. Request permission to reduce sentry duty to 30-minute rotation. My men are getting cold. They're getting antsy. Over. And then we hear the response. This is Colonel Stewart. Garber, please have the men not on watch. Assemble for a briefing. Over. And then Garber answers, Roger, Colonel. Over and out. And, I mean, they do a great job of showing us John's face during this whole thing. You know, he is completely in shock that they were actually able to find a radio that he can listen in to what's going on, you know. So I think it's great how that happens. But I have a few questions about the different things that are said here. You know, on the one hand, you know, we hear what Garber's asking for. He's asking, you know, that first of all, as we pointed out numerous times over the course of this week, also there is only a total of 7 of them so far. You know, that are left alive. Okay, 5 are dead. You have Cochran who died and the 4, you know, painters. And they were a total of 12. So they're down to 7. And now he, you know, take away Garber and take away Stewart. So you only have 5 guys in this rotation of doing guard duty. So, you know, half hour on, 2 hours off, that still works. You know, for the whole thing. But on the other hand, it's just very funny that they're doing this in such a formal way.
Hmm.
You know, as opposed to Garber just deciding to do it. You know, my men are getting cold and they're getting antsy. What are they getting antsy about? About standing up, you know, standing at the door or standing at the bell tower or whatever it is.
Yeah.
You know, what do you think? What do you...
Well, I mean, the formality, the military or ex-military. So, I mean, that never leaves you. I'm from sunny, warm Australia, so I don't know what it's like in these blistering, cold environments. Maybe half an hour is a long time. I don't know. Or they're just being a bit juvenile. I don't know.
No, I don't know if it's a question. I don't know if it's a question of being juvenile. First of all, a half hour of guard duty is not. It's something that usually, you know, passes very quickly. You know, so yeah. It takes more time to do the actual rotation than anything else, which is interesting.
You it's know, freezing out here. I'm seeing icicles. That could be, right. Yeah, Chekhov's icicles. But yeah, what's it like in those cold wintry months in the northeastern corridor of America? Are they that bad? I mean, planes and automobiles seem to show it was very cold, and that was even in the sort of Midwesty part.
And that was also in November. You know, we didn't even get to December at that point. You know, they're in Chicago where they're showing all the coldness of the whole thing. But yeah, I mean, it's just very strange. It's there because they want us to be able to hear them chatting about something. But then the other
precisely
thing, right. Yeah. Then the other thing that gets me about it though is that Stewart says, you know, have the men not on watch assemble for a briefing. So if they have a total of 5 guys, okay, and let's say they only have 1 guy on guard, so he's basically saying get the other 4 guys in here for a briefing. You know, it It's not as if he's asking for 100 guys to show up.
Yeah. Well, that's a good point. We're soon going to cross to the church and have the sort of ideology sermon that's cut short by events that are to follow. But
Right. We'll get there in a little bit later in this minute. But still, it's just very strange.
Well, like you said, they have to put something there. They could be, I don't know, something that's readily identifiable, rolling out the names. So we hear Colonel Stewart or Garber. So he hears these names. And as the audience, we're supposed to look and notice the obvious product placement. Kenwood, I think, is like the third or fourth time there's a Kenwood device in this movie. So I'm sure that's what they're really thinking, just as long as we concentrate on the visual of this Kenwood walkie-talkie.
Yeah. I mean, the same walkie-talkie that we've seen before. You know, so.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And Telford's device was one as well, yeah. And I think also Dennis Carmine had one as well. Anyway, it pops up a few times in this movie. I did notice.
Right. So, yeah, it's just a little strange that the way that they do that there.
But, it is a little bit. But what else could they put? They definitely want to hear the name Colonel and or something.
Right. No, they want to have Garber and Colonel and the Colonel Stewart there so that, you know, not just John, but also the audience can hear who it is that they're listening to. Yeah. You know, it's also pretty funny that they're identifying themselves as opposed to using code names.
That's right. Yeah. Well, you know, the army legacy of being the army just never leaves you.
That's true. But again, throughout the rest of this movie, you know, where they say, you know, this is Buckwheat, we're in the clubhouse is open. You know, things like that. You use code names.
Yeah, good point.
Next week we're gonna have, you know, Falcon and Eagle's Nest and Hatchling and stuff like that. So, like, you'd think that they would have done that here also, as opposed to being so blatant. Unless they have that much hubris that, as far as they're concerned, there's no way that anyone's gonna be able to crack it here. So let's just use our real names.
Yeah, good point.
You know, so that's what I found a little strange, the way that they do that there. I actually wanted to back up a second. You know, when Marvin is talking and he says M for miscellaneous, okay, do you know, like, first of all, the definition of miscellaneous, or the, you know, the origin of the word miscellaneous? What would you think?
Well, I'm assuming it's either Greek or Latin. I know the general meaning, I suppose, just means things of a different type that probably things that you can't easily categorize under other categories, I guess. As to its actual, yeah, you tell me. It's probably I'd say a Roman word, a Latin word.
Okay, well, first of all, it's what it means is items or people gathered or considered together of various types or from different sources.
Okay. From sources, yeah.
Right, meaning that there's very little connection between all of them. Okay, it comes from the Latin, which means to mix, or something that's mixed up. And then, you know, in the early 17th century, they added it to English by adding the O-U-S, you know, by saying that it's, you know, someone who sometimes it means having various qualities and things like that. But nowadays, it basically just means, it's basically the junk drawer. Yeah, it's okay. We don't know where to put this, so we're gonna just put everything together. You know, things that are usually not connected and things like that. So, no, I just find it very funny that that's the word that, you know, you have such a long and garbled word to basically say hodgepodge everything that's going on.
It should be a shorter and sweet and short and sweeter word, huh?
Yeah. I mean, I actually looked it up in the Urban Dictionary, and the definition of it in Urban Dictionary is something that doesn't fit into any category. It's just interesting that, you know, first of all, you wouldn't necessarily think that Marvin would use such a high-level word. I think that's also part of it.
Have you spoken at length about Marvin in previous minutes
when
introduced him?
No, we spoke a little bit about him when we encountered him in his little apartment, but not so much. What would you like to say about Marvin?
Well, I said
he's, or about Tom, like, Bauer.
He's trying. Tom Bauer. He sort of reminds me of a cross between, like, he's trying to do a bit Jack Nicholson sometimes, or his delivery in later minutes reminds me of Jack Nicholson.
I mean, like when he says, "I'll be damned, if I'm gonna clean this up."
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that line in particular. Also, have you seen The Untouchables?
Yeah, of course.
Sure. You know the bookie that gets spoiler.
Bookie
that gets murdered in the elevator. It sort of reminds me of that character that the guy they find on the Canadian border.
The guy they get on the Canadian border and then pretend to shoot someone else at the same time.
That's right. Yeah. Chicago methods. Anyway, he ends up dying in the, doesn't he? He ends up being shot in the elevator.
But that's not him, though. That's not Tom Bauer.
No, it reminds me of this guy here, Marvin, reminds me of Cross of whoever that actor is in The Untouchables with Jack Nicholson. That's all I was suggesting.
Okay.
And I wonder, in the late 80s, are we supposed to think he's just a bit of a kooky crackpot, Marvin?
You're talking about Brad Sullivan. That's who you're talking about.
Brad Sullivan. This guy, Marvin, yeah. Are we supposed to think he's sort of like the homeless janitor or something that's living in the bowels of the airport? Yeah, he's a weirdo.
That's who he is. You know.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Now I have another question. Okay, so John starts hearing the beeping on the radio, and you know, we've established, basically, we're about to establish where Marvin got this radio. But so let's say Marvin has this radio only 10 minutes. Okay. He would have heard people talking on it before. You know, it does have the code punched in.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, he wouldn't know that there's some connection to what's going on. Like, why wouldn't he already offer it to John as soon as he would see him and say, "Hey, look what I found. I found, you know, this walkie-talkie, and these guys that you're dealing with are talking on it," or something to that effect.
But Rob, he's obsessed with the coat. He may have a new coat to see out the winter months down there. And he's just too busy fingering the holes through the coat or the trench coat, whatever it is.
Okay. All right. That is fair.
He forgot himself.
That is fair. I will give you that one. You got me on that one. And did you also notice that the way that Stewart responds to Garber, he doesn't even give him an answer about changing the sentry duty?
Oh, yeah, I guess he doesn't.
You know, he says, "My men are getting cold and they're getting antsy, over." And then the response from Stewart is, "This is Colonel Stewart. Garber, please have the men not on watch, assemble for a briefing. Over." You know, it's like, I'm not even going to – he's basically saying that's a very stupid request and there's no way I'm going to approve it. So in order for you to save faith, I'm just going to ignore the fact that you asked it. Is that not possible?
I think that's a good reading of what happened. Yeah,
I think that makes sense. And then the shot changes a little bit, and then we see Stewart at the church, you know, at the podium, and it looks like he's about to give a sermon.
Yeah,
and he begins talking, and he goes, "Gentlemen, tonight the pattern ends. The dominoes will fall no more, and the ramparts will remain upright." And that's all he gets to say before he's interrupted by Thompson, who goes, "Sir, General Esperanza's plane just came on the scope." And that's it. You know, he's able to get two sentences in to try to encourage his men that are already there because they know they're getting paid. You know, he doesn't really need to find a way to convince them, you know, to join in. They've already joined in. They're already part of all this.
I know. You don't talk ideology while you're on the mission. You just talk about the mission.
That's right.
It's a bit more of a, well, it's not really an exposition dump for us, is it? Because we already know this, but just add a bit of more gravitas to it. I don't know.
Yeah.
To show, look, this isn't Hans Gruber. These aren't fake terrorists, mercenaries. These are actual real politically activated terrorists, anyway.
Yes, correct.
Okay,
so he mentions dominoes. Now, what do you know about dominoes, John?
I know it's a game. I know, like, most board games, like chess and stuff, it's probably from the Far East or China or India or something. I know it's a nice, quaint game to play with in your childhood, but that's about it.
Okay. So, first
Tell
of all,
more.
The game of dominoes, so it's a tile-based game that's played with gaming pieces that are sometimes known as pieces, bones, rocks, stones, men, cards, or sometimes they just refer to them as dominoes. And each of them have combinations of spot counts between 0 and 6. And you have it's doubled on each of it. You have different sides. You know, on one side, you know, it's split down the middle. So on the right-hand side, it'll have, you know, 0 to 6. And on the left-hand side, it'll have 0 to 6. And that's basically, you know, how you know how to play the game. We're not going to talk about how to actually play the game itself, but it's similar to a card game or dice or something like that where, you know, you always have the same numbers that are there. It's just a question of the order that you get them and how you play them. So the earliest mention of the game of the game dominoes came from the 13th century in China. So you were correct about that.
Yeah.
And then for some strange reason in Italy in the 18th century, they had another game called dominoes that came up, which is slightly different than Chinese dominoes. And nobody really knows if this was something that was thought of independently or it's because, you know, Italian missionaries who were in China learned how to play it in China. And then somehow when they got to Italy, you know, changed the game a little bit themselves. Do you know why? Do you know what the word domino means and why it would be called domino? Any clue?
Well, you've mentioned Italy there and obviously domine, something religious, isn't it? Like something... like savior or something. I don't know. I'm not religious at all, but Dom, the best. Is it something to do with religion or something?
No, it's part of they used to have a carnival in Venice and there's a specific costume that people would wear, which was a black hooded robe with a white mask.
What city did you say? Naples?
No, Venice.
Okay. Anyway, that was the name of a costume, was it, in Venice?
Yeah, they would have a carnival in Venice where they would use it. I mean, it reminds me of like the idea of V for Vendetta with Natalie Portman.
All right.
You know, that's the way I see it, you know, with a white mask, you know, with a black hood or something like that. So obviously it's the combination of black and white together is what makes it called the dominoes. So... The most interesting thing I've found about dominoes is that in the state of Alabama, it was actually illegal to play dominoes on Sunday.
Okay.
Up until 2015 when they repealed that law. I just find it really weird because like why would someone make a law that you can't play dominoes on Sunday? You know, I understand the idea of the Sabbath and stuff like that, but why dominoes? Maybe you weren't able to play cards there either or something like that. Maybe it's like the idea that you can't play any gambling games and dominoes was included. I don't know.
I hope it's nothing to do. It's nothing so puerile as the fact that it's black and white. I hope that's not a race thing. Maybe it's...
No, I don't think so. In Alabama, even in Alabama, I don't think they were like that. Because then why would it be only on Sundays? They'd be like, okay, this is too racial, so you can't play it on Sundays. I don't know.
Maybe you'll find if we dug a bit deeper, a lot of other board games were also not allowed on Sunday because it's the Sabbath, you know, about the Christian Sabbath, whatever it's called. Maybe it wasn't just dominoes. Maybe it was whist and Connect Four and tic-tac-toe as well. Who knows?
Maybe it depends on what color the tic-tac-toe game is. I don't know. Don't know. And then he also mentions about the ramparts, right? And he says the ramparts will remain upright. Why do you think he would say that?
Well, I know he's trying to use the metaphor of containment during the Cold War about dominoes, right? Like first it would be Vietnam and then Cambodia and then Malaysia. And I suppose he's just making – or do you mean specifically what a rampart is? I don't know. Is it a wall? What sort of military
– Well, a rampart is a wall, yes. It's a wall where you keep watch from. But I'm trying to figure out the connection here between, you know, him saying, okay, the pattern ends tonight. What pattern? You know, the pattern of America letting the dominoes fall, you know, all these different communist countries or something like that. And the ramparts, I guess, is the wall that's trying to keep communism away, I guess. And it will remain upright, meaning that there's nothing that's going to be able to make us fall down because of it. I don't know. It's just a very strange explanation, I guess you can say. Don't know.
Well, I don't know if, do we demand that our military leaders are great poets and proper users of correct metaphors and stuff? I don't know.
Yeah, like he's given here a political speech, so I don't know. I don't know what he's trying to gain from this. I don't know.
From my brief knowledge, I mean, it wasn't really until the early 2000s that the red tide sort of happened in Latin America, wasn't it? Like with Chavez and stuff, the late 90s, and then that guy in Bolivia and Lula in Brazil. This is sort of a time in the early 90s that still basically was a lot of center or right-wing government. So I don't know. I'm a bit confused by that.
Yeah. No, I don't know the answer to that one. Not really sure. And I also love the way that they shoot the scene. You know, as we mentioned earlier, we have basically just four guys that are supposed to be sitting there, you know, to listen to this grand speech, but the room is very dark. It's hard to count how many people are really there. You have to look really, really carefully, and you can see, I think, three of them, including John Leguizamo, you know, but, you know, mostly you can't really, unless maybe they have two guys on sentry duty at the time, which means that there is only three that are sitting there listening to this, I don't know, for lack of a better phrase, this pointless speech, because this speech really means nothing. You know, and
it's preaching to the converted. And,
that's right. Yeah. Preaching to the choir, as they say. And, you know, I there's a relief that, you know, Thompson interrupts him by saying that the plane is coming on the scope. Yeah.
Maybe they're going for a bit of Star Wars gravitas, like he's Mon Mothma delivering, you know, some stirring speech, like they're closing in on the X-Wing. And I don't know if it falls a bit flat with an audience of just four people.
Correct.
And,
Yeah, no, not really sure about that. And then Stuart walks over to the phone, picks up the phone, and goes, "Attention, Dulles Tower. We will be lighting up a runway. Do not attempt to land any planes. Remember, monitoring you." And then Barnes looks over at Trudeau and says, "What do we do?" And only tomorrow will we actually hear Trudeau's response to that. But, I mean, my whole question here is, why would he say don't attempt? How would they attempt it? If as far as he's concerned, they have no communication with the planes, because, you know, Stuart and his men have no connection to the outer marker beacon. So they don't know that there's this beep, beep, beep sound going on. And, you know, he's saying we're monitoring you, but apparently they're not monitoring them because they're able to talk on the outer marker beacon. So it's just very funny. So why would they even assume that they found a way to talk to the planes, and where are they going to try to land the plane if they see a runway? It's, you know, they would just say quickly, okay, go over to runway 115 or whatever it is. You know, get in there quickly before they turn off the lights. I don't know. It's not going to help, because the ILS system is completely, you know, off. It still will tell any other plane coming in that they're 200 feet away from the ground, which is something that will probably come up at the end of this movie about the fact that they never fixed the ILS system. So how are all those planes landing? But we have a few months till we get there to talk about that. So, yeah, I don't know. It's a very strange way for Stuart to make this threat, which he knows that he has no proof as to what they're doing, as to whether, you know, we're supposed to let them out or not. I don't know.
This is almost a bit of a lift of Dirty Harry when Scorpio's bouncing him around town from phone booth to phone booth, obviously like Die Hard with a Vengeance, to come up. But he also says, you know, I'm monitoring you. You're not all the time, but you'll never know when or where. So it's a bit of a Dirty Harry echo there.
Right. Okay. Because,
like you said, they don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. That's just very weird.
I did want to say, for foreigners like me, Dulles always sounds too close to Dallas. I wonder how many times people have made bad plans with relatives and like, I'll meet you in Dallas. Dulles. Anyway, I'm sure that's happened more than once.
Yeah, probably.
I think I said last minute that Bruce doesn't look good in coats, and those sort of coats make everyone look middle-aged. I don't know if I brought that up last minute or when he was with Marvin, but it doesn't do anyone any favors, Rob.
Okay, that's fair. So it's a good thing that John is wearing Barnes's his jacket, nothing else.
Yeah.
Okay, so in the script, it starts off by saying, focus chain, McLean stares at the table, and one of the scrambled transceivers, one with a green LED. You know, so like it's very different, the whole thing. There isn't the whole conversation about miscellaneous or his filing system, mm-hmm. things like that, as we talked a little bit about that yesterday, how it was very different. And then it says, in the church at night, Stewart is in the pulpit, his men attentive. So again, he doesn't hear in the script Garber and Stewart talking. And then Stewart actually has a much longer diatribe here. So I will read it. We've put it out around the world over and over again. We dropped the Shah. Marcos, throw Noriega overboard. You know what they think around the globe? The worst thing that can happen to you is to have America as a friend. And now that Steinhead Gorbachev, he's got some nice English suits and a wife without gold teeth. So now the commies are nice. Gentlemen, we are soldiers, and we do not believe in fairy tales, sweet though they may seem. Well, tonight, the pattern ends. The dominoes will fall no more, and the ramparts will remain upright. So they basically cut out the first three quarters of his speech. I guess they didn't want to offend anybody and decided to take all that out of it. But if you have the whole thing, it tells you what it is that he's really trying to say here. He's trying to say that, you know, he's looking at this from a very patriotic aspect. You know, he doesn't mm-hmm. think he's going against the patriotism of the U.S. by doing this. He feels this is part of patriotism for the U.S. to be able to help Esperanza. So,
yeah, well, I suppose they've wisely jettisoned mentioning the Shah, because then it becomes more just it detracts from the fact that his mission now is about the red tide and communism and left wing governments over the world. But if you bring the Shah into it, then it brings into the religion into it, I guess. So they just want to keep it a simple message for a 1990 audience. You know, they're anti America's isolationist, which allows, you know, leftist regimes to triumph around the world.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. That's true. And then, I mean, the rest of what Stewart says is exactly word for word, except for instead of saying we are lighting up a runway now, he says I am lighting up a runway. Again, doesn't really make a difference. Very slightly. And then the description at the end of this minute is great. It says, and now like magic, one distant runway twinkles on. Almost immediately, the chatter from the sky picks up. Questions, demands, pleading. So, like, it shows that the planes up above, and we talked earlier this week, you know, were the planes able to see the plane crash? And, you know, we came to the conclusion that they probably couldn't. But if they can see the runway lights, so I guess that means that they could see it, because you'd think that the fire that's burning is slightly higher and more easily visible than the runway lights. So I don't know. Not really sure.
Yeah.
All right. So every Thursday we have a segment called Aviation Thursday, where my guests will give their top five movies about aviation, whether it could be planes or airports or spacecraft or something like that, whatever they want. So John, you have a top five for us. Start with your number five and work your way up.
With pleasure. Well, number five, of course, I had to have an Eastwood film on the list, so I've chosen Sully. Which I
well, didn't quite. He doesn't start. Yeah. He doesn't start it.
He directs it. Yeah. Yeah. No, I quite liked it. First one I heard when I first heard the movie was being made about it, I thought, yeah, it's a great story, but it can really sustain like an hour and a half film. It's sort of like a great article to read, but is literally within the first 10 minutes of flight. So, but I appreciated how he played the different aspects, of, replayed it, and so forth. So yeah, Sully's number five. Number four, I'd say The Aviator. Have you seen that?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, like the history of it and the obsession of one man and the effects I remember being quite good as well. So that was another good movie.
I found it to be a little long. It was something that feels drawn out. I don't mind long movies as long as they don't feel as if they're being drawn out. And that one to me just felt too much that it was being drawn out.
I only saw it at the cinemas once and then on home movie, a year or so later. But yeah, it's still, I have a good memory of it. Maybe it is too long. I'll check it out again. Number three is not a movie, but a episode of Spielberg's Amazing Stories. Maybe you know the one I'm about to mention, Rob.
You're talking about the pilot episode.
Yeah. The Mission, yeah? Is that the one we're talking about?
Mm-hmm.
Where he gets trapped
with underneath Kevin Costner. The turret.
Yeah.
With Casey Sizemore, or however his last name is pronounced.
Yeah. And also Kiefer.
And Kiefer Sutherland.
I think, is a young Anthony LaPaglia in it, maybe?
It could be. From
good old Australia? Yeah, I'm not sure.
It's been a while since I've seen it.
It's a really good movie. It's sort of like a Roger Rabbit meets Memphis Belle type.
Yes.
But yeah, it's a very good movie, a very good episode. Two, I'm going to be a basic beep and choose Con Air. the plane's not the best thing about the movie, but it is certainly about
it. But it takes place in the sky, so that's fine.
It does. And number one, Airplane. great movie. Good on the Zucker brothers and Abrams for making that.
Yeah.
I still watch that, once a year. There's an Airplane Minute, as you know, and it's just a hilarious movie it's awesome.
Yeah. All right. Very cool. So you want to once again tell people where they can find JBAM?
DirtyHarryMinute.com. Best place to find us, DirtyHarryMinute.com.
Okay. That is very simple. And finding me is also very simple. All you have to do is a quick search for Move Around Minute. You can find me on my website, MoveAroundMinute.com. You can find me on Facebook, and you can find me on Twitter. So, John, you feel like coming back again tomorrow to finish up this week? And maybe we'll see what happens, with this plane that's supposed to be showing up?
You betcha. Of course.
All right. Excellent. So, until tomorrow, yippee-ki-yay!
Yippee-ki-yay, mother!
If you're fond of sand dunes and salty air, quaint little villages here and there.